of Chamber Prom from Cadogan Hall, which follows the 1 o'clock news read for us now by Katrina Young.
The Labour leader Ed Miliband has accused ministers of offering knee-jerk responses to the riots in English cities last week. Speaking at his former school in North London, he said David Cameron was reaching for shallow and superficial answers to social problems that he was scared to investigate properly. Earlier, the Prime Minister pledged to tackle what he described as the slow-motion moral collapse that had happened in parts of the country. He promised an all-out war on gang culture and action to turn around the lives of the 120,000 most troubled families. Two men and a teenager have appeared in court, charged with the murder of three men who were hit by a car during the disturbances in Birmingham last week. They were remanded in custody until December. More than 50 people have died in a series of bomb attacks across Iraq. In Kut, 100 miles southeast of Baghdad, two explosions within minutes of each other killed at least 37 people. The former Egyptian president Hosni Mubarak has made another court appearance in Cairo on charges of corruption and of ordering the killing of protesters during the uprising earlier this year. He was accompanied by his two sons, who face similar charges. The trial has now been adjourned until next month. Police in Jersey say that the six people who were stabbed to death yesterday at a flat in the island's capital, St Helier, were from two local families. Three young children, two women and one man died. A 30-year-old man, who's had surgery for knife wounds, is in police custody at Jersey Hospital. Changes are to be made to the Grand National course at Aintree following the deaths of two horses in this year's race. The famous Beecher's Brook fence is to be levelled off to reduce the height difference between takeoff and landing, and some other obstacles will be reduced in height. And the weather forecast, it'll become cloudy and breezy in the southwest during the afternoon, and spells of rain will spread northeastwards through the rest of the day. The east of the UK should stay mainly bright. And that's the BBC News and Weather. Now on Radio 3, it's time for Prom's Chamber Music, live from the Cadogan Hall in London and presented by Catherine Bott.
Welcome to Cadogan Hall and a concert that will include two works that are being performed at the Proms for the first time and the London premiere of a work by Benjamin Britten. That's quite a startling thought. But thanks to the work of the team at the Britten Peers Foundation, who are currently appraising and publishing the best of Britten's juvenilia, we're going to hear his piano variations on a theme of Frank Bridge, written in 1932. And the name of Frank Bridge leads us to the two Proms premieres I mentioned. Bridge has been rather neglected since his death 70 years ago this year. Now we're going to make up for lost time. There's a phrase in a recent newspaper article which beautifully sums up one of the aims of today's recital. The consistency of Bridge's output, its expressive range, and the composer's unique voice ought to earn him more than just a footnote in British 20th century music history as the teacher of Benjamin Britten. Performing today, members of the Aronowitz Ensemble, formed 7 years ago by seven outstanding young international artists to explore the repertoire for strings and piano. Former members of the Radio 3 New Generation Artist Scheme, they've played twice before at the Proms and have had several works written specially for them. For the first piece in today's concert, the Aronowitz Ensemble is joined by the distinguished oboist Nicholas Daniel, who has a close connection with the music of Benjamin Britten himself. At the beginning of his career, he worked a great deal with Britten's partner, Peter Pears, who told him that Britten used to talk about the oboe as a vocal instrument. We're going to hear the Fantasy for Oboe and String Trio, dedicated to Leon Goossens, who asked Britten to incorporate a good bit of time off in the middle so that he could rest his lips. Nicholas Daniel describes the piece as a short piece that really packs a punch. Now he joins the Aronowitz Ensemble to play Britten's Fantasy.
Thank you.
Britain's Fantasy for Oboe and String Trio, first broadcast in August 1932, and performed today live on BBC Radio 3 by oboist Nicholas Daniel and members of the Aronowitz Ensemble. When the very young Benjamin Britten first heard the music of Frank Bridge, he said he was knocked sideways. A family friend arranged an introduction, and once Bridge had examined some of the boy's work, he took him on as a pupil. Britten's first lesson was in 1928. He was just 14. We're going to move, musically speaking, from pupil to teacher and then back again for the next two pieces in the programme. And with me, doing the long walk to come and explain it all, is pianist Tom Poster. Tom, explain how these next pieces work. You're going to begin with a Bridge idyll for string quartet, and then the work it inspired. How does it work?
Exactly. Well, Bridge wrote three idylls for string quartet, and Britten took the theme of the middle one made it into this set of piano variations, which I'm going to follow it with. So we're going to sort of do a semi-segue from one to the other, but with just a small bit of stage management in the middle. But Britten really takes this theme and takes on an extraordinary journey. And you'll hear, of course, the similarity. Britten, the theme is actually the first third of the idyll quoted in full, and then you'll hear six variations on that.
Does Britten Britannize it at all, or does he play it? Will you play it straight as Frank Bridge wrote it?
Oh, the theme itself is played straight. That should sound pretty much exactly as Bridge's, but then after that, everything's Britannized. He takes it on this journey, which really, I think, variation form appeals so much to young composers because you can do so much with a small cell of material, and I think often the temptation is to do almost too much. This is kind of quite a schizophrenic piece. There's not a very organic development. He's doing all sorts of things. I remember when I used to write as a young child, I actually once wrote a set of piano variations, and I was trying to do the most extreme things I could, and in the last variation, I call for a chorus of four-part singing aardvarks. Britten doesn't quite push it to that extreme, but there is this sense that he's just trying to do as many things as possible, and they don't necessarily follow on after each other, but each idea is so fabulous and so Britten-ish.
Now, I'm just wondering, we do know that there were originally six variations. He crossed the sixth one out. Was that the aardvarks?
Well, it might have been his aardvarks. But I think it's hard to know. He actually crossed out twice. He began it twice, and he finished it. So that's what I'm going to play. But then he just struck one diagonal line through it. So evidently he wasn't happy with it. But then again, there's no evidence that he intended any of this work really to be published or played publicly. So it seems, you know, less... it's just wonderful to hear this great music of Britten, and even though it's an early work, there's so much it's looking forward to, and of course it foreshadows the great string orchestra variations.
Well, that was five years later,
exactly.
Very much for orchestra, but using the same theme.
Yes, but then subjecting it to a much more organic development, and that was very much a portrait of Frank Bridge. I think this is just Britten's mind running wild, but in a wonderful way.
Well, I can't wait to hear it because I haven't heard it before, so I'll leave you to go and get your fingers ready, and we will dismiss from our minds all thought of aardvarks right now. Okay. Thank you very much, Tom Poster. So we're going to hear the Aronowitz Ensemble in the first Proms performance of the second of Frank Bridge's three idylls for string quartet, written in 1906. Followed by the London premiere of the work it inspired, Britten's Piano Variations on a Theme of Frank Bridge. Tom Poster played Britten's Piano Variations on a Theme of Frank Bridge, and before that, the origin of that work, an idyll for string quartet by Bridge himself, played by members of the Aronowitz Ensemble. Those piano variations that we just heard were composed in 1932, by which time Britten was studying with John Ireland and Arthur Benjamin at the Royal College of Music. But he never forgot his studies with Frank Bridge. And 5 years later, already making a name for himself, he wrote a sort of present for the older man, the orchestral variations on a theme. And when Frank Bridge received them, he was greatly moved and wrote to Britten, "It's one of the few lovely things that has happened to me, and I feel richer in spirit for it all." And by the way, those variations will be played at the Proms next Sunday night. Sadly, few lovely things did seem to happen to Frank Bridge. He seems to have been a difficult man to get on with, and this may have contributed to a general lack of appreciation of his music. Back to that recent article again. Good quote here. "Bridge's journey is one of the most remarkable in British music. A sustained revival of interest in his powerful and distinctive music is long overdue." So, contributing to that revival, the Aronowitz Ensemble end today's Proms Chamber Music Recital with the first Proms performance of Bridge's Piano Quintet, first performed in a private concert in 1907, with Bridge himself playing viola. After one public outing, Bridge withdrew the piece, and it wasn't until he'd substantially reworked the first movement that he was content to allow it to be heard again in 1912. The artists on that occasion were pianist Harold Samuel and the English String Quartet. Now, in 2011, we'll hear Frank Bridge's Piano Quintet played by pianist Tom Poster and members of the Aronowitz Ensemble. a first outing at the Proms for the piano quintet by Frank Bridge. It was played by pianist Tom Poster and members of the Aronowitz Ensemble. The string players we've heard in various permutations in today's concert, joined earlier, of course, by oboist Nicholas Daniel, are violinists Magnus Johnston and Nadia Wesenbeek, viola player Tom Hankey, and cellists Guy Johnston and Marie MacLeod. This concert will be repeated on Radio 3 next Saturday afternoon, and of course it's available for the next 7 days via the Radio 3 website. Tonight, at the Royal Albert Hall at 7:30, Valery Gergiev conducts the Orchestra of the Mariinsky Theatre in Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake. No 32 fuete, although there is a very interesting interval talk about that much-cheered bit of choreographic one-upmanship. But it does have a score, does Swan Lake, that stands alone without a tutu in sight. And I'll be back here at Cadogan Hall next Monday at 1 p.m. to introduce flautist Emmanuel Paud and pianist Eric Lesage. I hope you'll join me then, but for now, a very good afternoon from me, Catherine Bott, as I hand you back to Broadcasting House.
Thanks very much, Catherine Bott. You're listening to Radio 3 with me, Louise Fryer, and it's time to relive last Wednesday evening when I was in the Radio 3's presenter's box at the Royal Albert Hall for the BBC Prom. Kirill Karabits, the principal conductor of the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, is bringing a touch of his native Ukraine to tonight's prom with a performance of Liszt's symphonic poem inspired by Mazeppa, who led the country's fight for freedom. And Elish Tynan joins the orchestra for a rarely heard concerto for coloratura, soprano and orchestra by the Kiev-born Reinhold Glier. He was a contemporary of Rachmaninoff, whose gloriously romantic Second Symphony rounds off the programme. In the early 18th century, in the reign of Peter the Great, not everyone was happy with the Tsar's dictatorship. His cruelty even extended to torturing his own son. Mazeppa became a Cossack chief who fought for Ukrainian independence. I asked Kirill Karabits if Mazeppa is still legendary in Ukraine.
Yes, of course. I mean, he was one of the most important figures that fought for the Ukrainian independence, and many people think that he's a real hero. And this, of course, is a tragic piece at the end. It's all about his death, which is a terrible thing. He was tied to a horse. But somehow that cruel element and his importance in the history together make a fascinating mixture. So, of course, it's a happy end in the piece, and he's forever written as a hero of the country.
Kirill Karabits. Mazeppa's punishment stemmed from his seduction of a Polish noblewoman. Mazeppa was denounced by her husband and bound to the horse, which was sent galloping across the steppe. And the happy ending comes as Mazeppa survives the ordeal, the Cossacks rescue him and make him their hetman, their supreme military commander. Byron immortalized Mazeppa in his epic poem. Tchaikovsky turned Pushkin's version into an opera. And in 1851, Liszt came up with this symphonic poem for orchestra, largely based on Victor Hugo's retelling of the tale. The piece grew out of Liszt's earlier transcendental piano etude, written when he was just 15, which in his 40s he adapted to fit the story more closely. So the music starts with the sounds of a whip as a horse is spurred on its way. Mazeppa's theme rings out on trombones and strings. There's a crash of timpani as the horse collapses and dies. And following Mazeppa's rescue, the piece concludes with a triumphant march. And here comes Kirill Karabits to begin this prom with Liszt's symphonic poem, Mazeppa. A heroic ending to that portrait of Mazeppa, the Ukrainian leader who fought against Peter the Great. That symphonic poem by Liszt, one of his many works included at this year's Proms in the composer's bicentenary year, performed by the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Kirill Karabits. Amazingly, that piece hasn't been heard at the Proms for half a century. It was last conducted here by Malcolm Sargent in 1961. Well, from a Ukrainian military hero to a composer who was born in the Ukraine, in Kiev, in 1875. You may be forgiven for being surprised to hear that Reinhold Glier was actually Russian. He Frenchified his family name, Glier, that his father was an instrument maker who had emigrated to Kiev from Saxony. Reinhold was